Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana, hometown of 1J Cutler. Future concert site, we hope. Of Beck, Nickelback, and Creed all together at the same time.
Yeah, Beck would not play with those bands.
Probably wouldn't be invited. You're right.
They probably wouldn't invite him because it's one of those things. It's like, you know, here's a great – is there Nick Saban? Here's a Nick Saban quote for you. Achievers hate mediocre people, and mediocre people hate achievers.
It's actually high achievers.
Well, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
I do.
Beck is good. Doesn't need album sales to justify his existence. I like how Keyser threw me the album sales of Creed, Nickelback versus Beck. I just sent you guys a nice text of other artists who have sold way more than Nickelback and Creed. Let me list some of them. Celine Dion, Justin Bieber, Chris Brown, Maroon 5, Linkin Park, Backstreet Boys, Flo Rida, Imagine Dragons, Enya, and Barry Manilow.
A few of those pretty good.
Yeah, who?
I love me some Linkin Park. Linkin Park's good stuff.
Good God.
Maroon 5?
Oh, God.
You don't like Celine Dion?
I mean, come on, man. You don't like Celine Dion.
You don't like Celine Dion?
No! No one likes Celine Dion.
Clearly someone does.
I don't believe that there's actually a human who likes Celine Dion's music. I don't believe it.
You don't like the Backstreet Boys?
I mean, come on.
Jeez. Everybody thinks my musical tastes are bad. Just because I don't like the Beatles.
Well, I mean, that's an issue. But, you know, I give everybody one mulligan. By the way, on the YouTube chat, good point by everybody on Canada. You know, SGA.
Yeah, we can't forget Jamal Murray.
Is Wiggins playing?
I have no idea.
Is Zach Edey playing?
He probably is, yeah.
Intriguing team.
They might... Would that roster come within 17 of the United States?
Yeah, you say that, but I mean, like, you could have one of those days where SGA and Jamal, like, you know, the full depth of the U.S. roster mattered, but like, the five guys are on the floor at a time, right? Like,
sure.
If you have a top five or six that can match up, which, I mean, I will say I watched some of Edey last night.
Here we go.
It was a summer league game. What's that?
Are the officials in the Olympic tournament going to give him every call?
Nah, they might. Look, it's going to be the same thing for him at every level. It's like, how do you officiate the guy?
I know.
People bounce off him. Is that a foul on him? You know? I don't know. I was impressed with how he looked last night in one summer league game. Keep it in perspective. Laverne on the text says Robbie listens to Disney music.
Yeah, I do sometimes.
I like It's a Small World.
Yeah. Hey, there's nothing wrong
with that. There is something wrong with Celine Dion, Justin Bieber, Chris Brown, Maroon 5, Linkin Park, Backstreet Boys, Flo Rida, Imagine Dragons, Enya, and Barry Manilow, who all sell way more than Nickelback and Creed, which they suck too. Beck's good, though.
It's good.
Thank you.
Glad we've established that.
I don't
think
I need to do a rant today. It's just a show-long rant. It's all your fault, Joel Jelinek.
What should the expectations be for Calvin Ridley this year? Coming off the contract for the Titans. Last year in Jacksonville, played in all 17 games, caught 76 passes, just over 1,000 yards, had 1,016, 13-4 a catch, 8 touchdowns for Calvin Ridley last year. Would you sign up for that right now if you're the Titans? Does it need to be more than that with the contract that he got? How do you view what the expectation should be for Calvin Ridley heading into this year? As I mute myself.
Wow. Mid-sentence. The mid-sentence mute is a rarity.
Need me some coffee.
Yeah. I think you'd sign up for it. I think you'd like better than that. But the thing is, it's not just Calvin Ridley go out there and perform. And, you know, we're talking about the Olympics. He's not just like an Olympic sprinter who dictates everything, right? If he has those numbers, that would tell me things are functioning pretty well with this offense. Because I definitely think that DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a productive year and have good chemistry with Will Levis. And you got two backs. You've got Tyler Boyd. You've got a variety of weapons to get the ball to. So I don't think any one person on this offense is going to have crazy numbers. So if he had those numbers, I think that would speak well of the whole thing. I think you would sign up for it in a second. Hey, if he has a 1,400-yard season and 11, 12 touchdowns and he hits a bunch of deep shots, even better. But I think you'd sign up for those numbers.
I think you probably would too. Now, I guess my follow-up to that would be, if he's got that, what does DeAndre Hopkins have? Like, could they both approach 1,000 yards? We talked about this last year with Hopkins and Burks. Could they both approach 1,000 yards?
Yeah.
One of them did. One of them did not. In this offense, with how much more we think they're going to throw the ball and the way the offense is going to look, I don't think it's unrealistic to ask that both of them get close to 1,000 yards this year. Now, a lot of that's also going to come down to, all right, how good's Will Levis, how good's the protection, all those things. Which, by the way, I saw a metric the other day, and I need to go find it again, that was ranking the offensive lines heading into this year, and the Titans were at like number 11, and I was like, wow, that's a heck of a jump from what they were last year.
Yeah, you got to show this one to me.
I got to find that one. I'll go find it again for you. But I think with the contract that he signed, there will be Titans fans that say, all right, well, he's getting more money. He should have more than 76 catches for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. He needs to be creeping more towards the 100 catch, 1,300 yards, 8, 9, 10 touchdown mark, which I get it. Like, you want those things. But what we talked about this a little bit last week with PK. What I'm really interested to see in this offense is, like, how does having Calvin Ridley and the threat that he could be down the field layer what they do with the passing attack? Like, they're not going to run him deep every play. We know that. It's not like he's just going to be running go routes out there. But he does have the ability to, in Randy Moss's words, take the top off the defense and push the ball down the field. And the Titans really haven't had a guy like that that's been a significant player, a starting player for them in a while. Like, A.J. Brown could do that. A.J. Brown can do everything. But A.J. Brown wasn't like a burner and somebody that you just send flying down the field all the time. So it's a different style of receiver than they've had in a while. And I'm interested to see how they use that. But also, you know, beyond his production down the field, what does the threat of him going down the field do for Boyd and do for Hopkins and do for Chig and guys like that in the offense? You would think that having somebody that's a stressor on the defense that way would help.
Yeah. I don't even know. I'm trying to think, like, when's the last time they had it? Because A.J. Brown could do everything.
Yeah.
And he would occasionally sneak downfield, but a lot of his stuff was after the catch, you know, and intermediate stuff that turned into bigger stuff, or even short stuff that turned into bigger stuff. When's the last time they had they used Khalif Raymond in that way, but primary receiver who had that kind of speed.
Tyrone Calico was fast until he pulled his hamstring 15 yards down the field.
You're going way back.
Yeah. Like, it's been a while. I mean,
how fast was Kendall Wright at first? Was he kind
of? I mean, kind of. He was more shifty than he was, like, just breakaway. Like, I don't remember Kendall Wright just running free down the field all that much.
Yeah. I mean, DGB was fast, big, was fast, but yeah. So
it's been a while since they've had a guy like this.
Yeah. And it's a great thing to have. I mean, if you want to look at this offense and just think about where Brian Callahan came from, right? I mean, every offense is different and personnel groupings are different and all that stuff, but Ridley is kind of the Ja'Marr Chase of this offense, right? Again, I'm not comparing him to Ja'Marr Chase, but you look at what Cincinnati does, everything they could possibly do. You watch the Bengals, like, everything they can do to get the ball in his hands, but certainly a pretty healthy diet of vertical routes too, because why wouldn't you? So
yep.
I mean, that to me is That's what Ridley, that's what they're going to try to get out of Ridley.
What should expectations be for Calvin Ridley this year? We'll take your thoughts on that on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. And also, I ran across a statistic yesterday, Joe, that paints Will Levis in a pretty good light. We'll get into that as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Iowa. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Rowe. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Expectations for Calvin Ridley heading into this year. Your thoughts on that on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I'm interested to see if the wide receiving core stays relatively healthy this year. You know, Ridley's going to be the headliner. Hopkins had a great year last year, and I think there's pretty clearly some chemistry between Levis and Hopkins. I mean, it reached the point last year where Levis would get in trouble and he would look around and say, all right, where's DeAndre Hopkins? Let's find him, which, based on their receiving core last year, probably not a bad way to go. More options for him this year. I'm interested to see what this all means for Boyd. You know, we've talked about the contract for Boyd. They haven't really had a dedicated slot guy that's been able to stay on the field with any sort of regularity in a long time here in Nashville. And I realize it's a different coaching staff and a different system and all that stuff. And we've seen what Boyd did in Cincinnati. So we got a general idea of the way that Brian Callahan's going to try to use him. I am interested with those two guys on the outside, what that opens up for Boyd over the middle. I mean, he's been very productive in his time in Cincinnati. You know, last year was a bit of a different year for not only him, but really for everybody, with Burrow going down and Higgins was banged up all year. So he got targeted 98 times last year, 67 catches, 667 yards. Like we talked about Ridley's numbers, would you sign up for that? I'd sign up for that right now from Tyler Boyd. If you told me he was going to get 67 catches for 667 yards this year from that position, I am interested to see what that looks like. His yardage total has been on the decline. So I mean, he was a 1,000-yard guy for a couple years in 18, 19. And then, you know, this receiving core came together. And since then, it's been 800, 800, 762, 667. So he started to go the other way from a yardage standpoint. I think the opportunities have kind of dwindled as well with Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase being out there. But in this offense, what's a good year for Boyd and how does that open up? You know, we talked about Ridley opening up other things. What's that going to open up for Tyler Boyd over the middle?
Yeah. I mean, probably 600-700 yards, something like that. I mean, look, I think that the value they got him for maybe says something about him too. I mean, like, he looks good out there in practice for whatever that's worth. But I was a little surprised that they were able to get him at the number they got him at. So I don't know.
It's 1 year up. If you forgot the money, it's 1 year up to $4.5 million.
Yeah. So, which is, yeah, you think about Tyler Boyd not long ago and what he was doing. And, he, of course, you know, he had those bigger numbers when he had to carry a lot more of the load of that offense.
Right.
So I don't know. Has he lost a step or a step and a half? You know, I don't know. He obviously knows the offense very well. He seems to fit in really well, and I think he'll be out there making plays. But, yeah, like something approaching 1,000 yards, I think, for – the two outside guys and somewhere in the 600-700 range for him. I mean, if you have that, I mean, just do the math. That there's like 2,600 yards for Levis right there, and Yep. Then you have other receivers. You have tight ends. The backs are going to have a pretty decent amount of production in the passing game. So now all of a sudden you easily get yourself up to about 3,500 yards if that's the production you get from your top three.
Joe, I saw this stat, this number thrown out there from Warren Sharp yesterday, at Sharp Football on Twitter, or X, or whatever you want to call it. And the number is the highest rate of red zone incompletions that are due to inaccurate passes. So my first thought when I saw that was, man, we've got a stat for literally everything in the NFL now. The highest rate of red zone incompletions due to inaccurate passes. So basically, passes in the red zone that are just wildly inaccurate, who has the highest and lowest percentage? At 60%, Mr. Fully Guaranteed Contract, Deshaun Watson, 60% of red zone incompletions due to inaccurate passes. So,
man,
that's not very good.
That sounds bad.
You start to creep down the list. I mean, there's Lamar Jackson at 38%, Patrick Mahomes and Jordan Love both at 29%, Joe Burrow at 25%, and all the way down here, just past Tommy DeVito at 17%, is Will Levis at 15%. So only 15% of Levis's passes in the red zone were incomplete due to inaccurate passes, which of the quarterbacks on this list is the second lowest percentage in the entire league. Only Jake Browning with the Cincinnati Bengals at 9% is a better quarterback apparently in the red zone with accurate balls. What do you think of this? Will Levis, one of the league leaders with accurate passes alongside Jake Browning in the red zone.
Yeah, it's an interesting stat for sure. So obviously, intentional throwaways don't count.
Would not count against this, yes.
Because obviously, it's drops.
Right.
So drops and intentional throwaways and anything else where you just missed the pass, it would be what this is. It just... this is one of those stats that I just have to be a little dubious of. Again, Deshaun Watson, 60%. Jake Browning, 9%.
Yes.
First of all, I'd love to see the raw numbers. How many passes are we talking about here?
Well, it can't be a lot for Levis. I don't think they spent a ton of time in the red zone.
Yeah, and he just started, later in the year. I am looking who's the best quarterback who has a high number? The high numbers are... they're either backup, again, Joshua Dobbs, great story, but he's a backup.
Be Lamar at 38.
Lamar's at 38, so there you go. Lamar's at 38. Stroud's at 35. So these are supposed to be two of the best quarterbacks in the league. They are. Well, Lamar is, and I think CJ will be this year. And then you get into also as you get into still in the 30s. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is at 29%. He's average in this stat, basically, right? So yeah, And then how many good quarterbacks are real low? I mean, who's the best quarterback who's super low? I guess you would have Goff at
Jared Goff.
19 and Cousins at 20.
Yeah.
So I don't know really how much it tells us, but it's interesting for sure. I mean, there are stats here certainly out there to support Will Levis. Our guy Mike Herndon wrote a piece at paulkarski.com. If you want to quickly – I mean, he had a tweet about this. He says, so to recap Will Levis's 2023, hit more often than any other QB, highest wide receiver drop rate of any QB, and a bottom three wide receiver separation score.
Yep.
And then to continue the tweet, the Titans went the offseason giving him a QB-minded head coach, 7th overall pick at left tackle, top 10 center, Calvin Ridley, Tyler Boyd. So that would seem to help, you would think. You would think that would help.
I'm just in my head imagining Deshaun Watson is like Rick Wild Thing Vaughn out there, just the ball going everywhere in the red zone. It's like, wow, Deshaun Watson threw that to the complete opposite side of the field of where he was supposed to there. What's going on? 60% in the red zone of inaccurate passes.
Obviously, he's been not good. But that I'd love to, someone who watches all Cleveland Browns games, is that a thing where it's you get in the red zone and someone's like, oh, my God, look at that. Where'd that go?
Where's he throwing the ball?
Sailing everything? I didn't know that was a particular issue with him.
I mean, he did.
He looked good against the Titans last year.
He did, other than throwing the ball backwards.
Yeah.
James Winston style.
Yeah.
He did look good. But
they helped him look
Titans
good.
Helped him look pretty good last year. That to me, again, I mean, we talked about intriguing SEC teams. There's a lot of intriguing quarterback discussions in the NFL this year. The Watson thing in Cleveland. If it's important for him to start really well. Because people were already all over Joe Flacco last year. If he starts bad this year, it may get ugly in Cleveland with him.
Who's his backup now?
Do
we know?
Is Dobbs back
know?
There? I know exactly who it is. It's Jameis. It's Jameis Winston.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like, and I kind of agree.
What a QB room that is.
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with the idea, you know, like Flacco. It's like you kind of can't have Flacco again.
Agreed.
You know, because it's like, I mean, you have, like, Deshaun Watson has to work out. Winston at this point is probably a pretty good, like, he's a clear two. Like, although, he's not a threat.
I mean, Jameis has not gotten an opportunity to start since he had his LASIK surgery. So, you know.
When was that?
That was like 3 years ago. Remember that?
Well, he started some games.
He started some games, but he's not been like a full-time starting quarterback.
Whoopty hell.
Remember that thing? He's like, I got LASIK surgery, and now I can see. And so that's good.
I mean, it's
go, Jameis.
I mean, it is, you know, probably makes a difference, right? It
probably does. You know, the year before when you throw 30 interceptions, maybe a good idea to get LASIK surgery.
Yeah, too bad you didn't do it a year
Jameis,
earlier.
Can you see what jersey your team's wearing?
God.
Throwing it to the wrong one a lot.
Maybe he'd be a great. Maybe that'll be the thing in Cleveland.
I would love to look at the Warren Sharp, Jameis Winston red zone inaccurate pass list from the year he threw 30 picks. Like, you would think it'd have to be up there.
Yeah. Yeah. How far did the stats go back? This is a new stat for me.
I've never seen it.
It's an interesting one.
It is. 615-737-1025. Some details on the UC Saros contract regarding a no movement clause. We'll get into that and what we think of that decision by the Predators and Barry Trotz coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Clap your hands.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. I have heard this song.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't know that I've classified it as good, but I've heard it.
Oh, it's good. Beck Odelay. Beck Odelay, classic. Classic album. I think 1996?
Were you still in your... So, probably not, based on that answer, but was there still a Joe Rex Road breakdancing phase when all this stuff was going on, or had you moved past it at that point?
Well, I never stopped. You know, like, if you're good at breakdancing like me, you just keep doing going. It. Basically, it's just
me and his money.
It's just a wedding. Yeah, okay. It's just like all my buddies' weddings. At some point, I would breakdance and people would laugh at me. I mean, that's kind of my thing, you know. But yes, Odelay, released May 28, 1996. That, Where It's At, Devil's Haircut. You've heard that song. The New Pollution. You've heard that song. Yeah. Jackass. You've heard that song too. I promise you. It's a great album. Let's see. What is this album? 2.3 million copies. He hasn't had a lot of commercials to say. He's kind of become like a folk singer in recent years.
Okay.
But I do know that he recently played a concert in Nashville, and then afterward he went to Dino's to get a burger.
Okay. Noel.
Which is pretty cool, too.
There you go.
Which is way cooler than freaking Creed or whatever the Canadian band you guys keep throwing in my face.
Hey, remember like a month ago, Nick, when Joe said he was going to stop taking shots at Creed and Scott Stapp, and that somehow just he's been here for like a week and a half since then, and has just intensified his shots that he takes at Scott Stapp.
And it's in our promo coming back from that break too.
But you guys keep bringing it back up to me.
No, you do.
No, but like you text me all the albums that Creed has sold way more than Beck. I don't care.
I mean, your list was better than all of those combined, probably, that you sent us earlier.
It's true. That's true.
I think the whole pop culture that has an effect from all of that.
I mean, Rex Road's getting called out on the YouTube chat too. Of typical boomer, out of touch.
Like I said, typical boomer, out of touch, doesn't like loud music. I'm like, I like good loud music. I play music way too loud. Just don't like bad music. This is not hard.
Joe, the details are out on the what'd you say, Nick?
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say PK likes Bucked Up or something like that. Remember he talked about his hype music one day? Do you remember that, Joe?
Oh, yeah. What was that band? It was very bad.
It was very bad.
He basically likes Bruce Springsteen and doesn't know anything else.
That's true.
That's okay.
The details are out on UC Saros' contract. We knew that there was a no movement clause. I asked Barry Trotz at the press conference last week about the no movement clause, and he didn't really answer like what it was. He did confirm that there was a no movement clause.
He didn't want to get into the details on that.
And he did allude to in his answer that in the beginning of the contract, it sounded like there was full no move. Now we know Puckpedia, which talks to agents about all this stuff, and then now Cap Friendly as well, has come out with the details on the Soros front. 6 years of the 8 year. So the first 6 years of the 8 year contract, a full no move for UC Soros. And then years 7 and 8, he's got a 15 team no trade list. So full no move the first 6 years of the contract, and then a 15 team no trade list in the final 2 years. What do you make of those stipulations on the no movement part of UC Soros' contract?
That's a little bit stronger of an NMC than I thought it would be, or even was when Trouts answered it.
I would agree.
It's a that's pretty extensive. That's pretty pretty thorough. It's pretty 6 thorough. Years, man.
It's pretty thorough. So that kind of goes to show you too that he's, if the 8 year contract wasn't enough to convince you that he's going to be here and he's going to be the guy, well, this probably should be.
Yeah.
I guess the one thing that you could still have in your, well, don't give up on Yaroslav Askarov being the goalie of the Predators yet, would be, I mean, the contract doesn't kick in until next year. You could trade him. You could trade him before it starts.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't know that would be the most advisable piece of business, because that would make a lot of people mad, but you could do it.
I mean, I suppose if they just completely bottom out this year, it's like, yeah. Oh, actually, no, we have to sell off everything.
Yeah.
Then there you go. Fire sale.
I don't think you're going to see that
this year. Yeah. But hey, Willie's plan for Askarov to be a happy backup for many years is
it's alive and well.
Coming along very nicely.
Yaroslav, you're 32. You're now the starter for the Nashville Predators.
And we still call you Askarov.
Yeah, it'd be good stuff. No, I think, first off, for those who would say it's not impossible to trade someone who has a no-movement clause, you are correct. We just saw, I mean, Ryan McDonagh had a no-movement clause, and he got traded twice. So it is not impossible to trade somebody with a no-movement clause. Now, it is, I mean, in some ways, fully up to them. Like, if right. UC Soros doesn't want to go anywhere, then he's not going anywhere. I mean, it's what
if
it is.
If the traffic finally gets to him here
right.
at some point.
Well, and now, I mean, it, to me, it's not even – when you sign him to the deal, that's one thing. But let's say that he didn't have any trade protection whatsoever. It's still probably not that big of a discussion point to me because of what you've done since then. Like, you're all in. You've gone Stamkos, Marchessault, Brady Shea. Like, at that point, if you would have told me heading into all this that that's what they were going to do, then I was like, well, okay, just – sign Soros, I guess, and go for it. Like,
yeah.
If that's what you're going to do and you're going to bring in all these guys, then the rebuild or reset the goalie timeline and all that stuff just doesn't make a whole lot of sense at that point. So this kind of is what it is. No movement protection aside, with what the direction that they've decided to go. And by the way, I mean, they signed this deal before they did all that other stuff with Stamkos and with Marchessault. So this was kind of the first step of that plan. And UC Soros is going to be the goalie for the next 9 years. I think it's pretty clear at this point.
Absolutely. And I still believe that at some point, you know, Askarov has to react the right way. And, you know, there is always the KHL as a possibility for, like, listening to Trotz. I mean, look, I think it's and what they've done with everything, they view this as, I think, much even more of a, you are just in Milwaukee this season than I anticipated. We've talked about the idea of, you know, kind of being down there, getting up quite a few starts up here still and things like that. I don't think it's going to be a transitional year like that. Do you? I think it's just,
no,
you
think
are
in Milwaukee
and you're still developing in Milwaukee. Is he okay with that? I mean, look, if you want to be a great player in the best league in the world, you have to suck it up and just be your best. Now, Trotz did leave open, hey, if he comes into camp and he's clearly the second best goalie, then that, okay, that could change things, right?
Yeah,
but like, what, that's an interesting point too. Like, what would that look like? Like, how do you know? I mean, obviously
that's,
you got performance on the ice, but like, is it really a possibility that you would hand over and say, oh, yeah, actually, Askey, you're up with us all year.
Well, and also, like, they're not paying.
You just signed a backup goalie.
They're not paying a ton of money to Scott Wedgwood. I mean, he's making $3 billion total over the next 2 years. But, like, $1.5 million to then turn around and not play him is not nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, So,
I mean, I guess if Askarov is incredible and you're like, I mean, think about this combo. Okay.
Then you leave the door open, which I think is exactly what Barry Trotz did. Of like, I think if he would have come out and said, Saros is the one, Wedgwood is the two, and Askarov is going to have to wait another year in Milwaukee, like, Askarov would not like that. Like, you at least got, even if there's not really a competition, which quite frankly I don't believe there is, but even if there's not really a competition, I think you have to leave the door open for that based on the current climate. And look, maybe he does come into camp and he forces you to pay attention.
He's so
right?
good that right. you have to.
Then
right?
you've got
to
consider
you can't
it.
You can't ignore it.
Like, I don't think that Barry Trotz is going to be closed off to it, but the contract that they've just signed Wedgwood to tells me that they're planning on him being the backup goalie this year.
But either way, Askarov will not be a Nashville Predator past the next trading deadline. I will call my shot right now, and I'll feel great about it.
I would be surprised. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I would be surprised if he's – like I said it yesterday. Like at some point when you're taking stock of where you're at with your organization and the needs that you have, you're going to look around and say, what are our best assets? And he's going to be either at or near the top of that list, right? Now, that doesn't mean that you move him at the deadline for just anybody and that, like, okay, that we need a rental player, so let's trade Askarov. But I do think at some point you look around and say, all right, we've got Saros for 9 more years. He's got the 1 year remaining on his contract, and then the 8-year kicks in. And you've signed up to be competitive right now. How do you accelerate that? And I think he could be a key piece in that in terms of a return. So I think you're right. Like I would be surprised if he's still on the team post deadline.
Now Trotz says right, they don't have to do it. And he came with a lot of examples of a young guy and you needed to play more and you had the two goalie thing and so
he did.
It's true.
In all of those examples, eventually one goalie got moved.
Yes.
Which is one thing
right.
that stood out to me in that comment. Like there was Ben Bishop
and
Vasilevsky. And Bishop was gone. Yeah. And there was Luongo and Schneider, and then I think Luongo was gone. So like eventually one of them got moved every time.
Yeah. And we know which one won't be now.
We do. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexrode.
And the time of chimpanzees, I was
to the Fat and Bald Show.
Butane in my veins and I'm out to cut the chuggy with the plastic eyeballs.
And I'm going to egg your house.
Yo. Cut it. So.
And I'm going to egg your house. Egg your house.
Am I allowed to talk yet, Nick? That's good. All right. He said, hey, let this one play out. You're going to want to do that. Okay.
Oh.
Look at him. Nick Keyes is very proud of himself.
He's so happy right now.
Very proud of himself.
By the way, Katie really didn't like my egg your house thing. I'm like, I'm not actually egging. Well, I might, but yeah, you know.
We'll see.
No one
fire off any fireworks last night?
I heard nothing.
All right. That's good.
I think that maybe.
Your warning was heeded.
People were scared. Yeah. Scared into being quiet.
Yeah. It is time for the Rex Rant.
Yeah,
the floor is yours.
I better just let this song play. Did you say you got the Vingan sound?
He's too busy worried about his mashup there to do the sound. He's got it now.
He's got his next concoction.
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard when we left yesterday, the show Veezer, Vingan and Keezer.
Good God.
Kingan.
Yeah. I heard you guys talking about these moves by Barry Trotz, and Vingan said something interesting. Let's see if this is what he said that I was
thinking
about.
Always been of the mind of this team is not going to get better until it allows itself to get worse. And clearly Barry Trotz does not think that way, and I can't begrudge him for that.
But I always felt like, especially near the end of the David Poyle era, it was time to take a real step back.
Yes, that was part of Vingan. I think it was the first segment, right? First or second segment yesterday? Second segment for you guys? Yeah. And I basically got – and look, we've had all these conversations about what you need to do, what you should do. Do you blow it up? Do you, you know, all these different – it's very hard in the NHL. But I got this sense from Vingan that he still has an issue with this, and I don't want to be full-on WHMR here, okay?
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to be, like, straight-up total fanboy like Jared with this stuff, okay? But I got to say, first of all, I was dead wrong. Like, I thought they should have traded Saros. I thought all these things. But now that I've seen it materialize, I think completely differently about it. I don't know how you couldn't. This is what you should want as a fan from your general manager. If it works out or not, we don't know, but it doesn't matter. Right now at this moment, what Barry Trotz has done is brilliant. And I think that he should have complete 100% approval rating from Preds fans on these moves. Again, we don't know what's going to happen, but you've given yourself a chance. And again, the big thing for me is you have given Yossi, Forsberg, Saros an actual chance to do something other than be on decent teams and play out their contracts.
Yeah.
And that was always the issue with the other path. The path of trade Saros, have a little pain, but a scar grows into it. Now you're not paying a goalie much, but you have a chance with your roster to really do something, but there's going to be a little pain time period in there. I thought that was the way to go. I'm wrong. I didn't think he was going to be able to get Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea in an hour on the first day of free agency. It's insane, and he should have full approval.
I agree. I think they have pulled off something that I didn't think they'd be able to pull off in terms of they have made this roster. They've gotten the roster back to a place where I think you can legitimately count them among the contenders in the Western Conference. And I just didn't think they'd be able to do that very quickly. Now, I still have questions. Like, I don't know if they're good enough down the middle. I don't know if they're good enough at center. Somebody in this discussion, and we've talked about this after the signings last week, somebody's going to be right and somebody's going to be wrong. Like, Tampa let Stamkos go. That's what they did. They let him go. They opened up money the weekend before free agency and still chose not to give it to him. They gave it to Gensel then gave it to Hedman right after that.
And then Sergachev's gone.
And Sergachev's gone.
Everything they've done to me is
– it's a little weird.
I don't get it.
But they actively chose to go in a different direction from Stamkos. Marchessault, I mean, we talked about yesterday Stamkos and Marchessault being motivated next year. Vegas moved on from him. So somebody in this discussion is going to be right, and somebody's going to be wrong. So I'm not totally convinced that the Predators, you know, are right there on the doorstep of winning a championship here. But I do think, objectively, if you look at their roster, they have gotten themselves to a point where you have to count them among the contenders in the Western Conference. And I didn't think that they would be able to do that as quickly as Trotz has.
And I think that maybe part of what Vingan was talking about yesterday that I took issue with is it was a little bit of a feeling like this was at the expense of the future. And that's what's so brilliant about it to me is it's not. They have gobs of draft capital. They have Askarov. They have some good prospects. They have not let go of any of their top prospects. So what that future looks like, I mean, I don't know. You know, there's just a lot of unknown, but there's a lot you can do with that. You still have all that, and then you have this. It's two timelines.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, I don't know if it'll work out, but this should be what you want as a fan. When you're in this situation in the middle with a couple great players and you look at the whole picture of the last two summers and what Barry Trotz has done, totally different than what I would have guessed when they did the sell-off, when Poyle was moving out and he was moving in, I would never have guessed this. And here they are. They have a team that can contend.
They do, and I agree with you. Like it's not at the expense of the future. I will say, I think some of it in what they've done here is a commentary, at least in my opinion, and I may be wrong here, but this is the way that I've viewed it. It's a commentary on, I think, some of the immediate replacements of the young guys. Like I look at this and I ask myself, would Barry Trotz have been this aggressive in free agency if he believed that Philip Tomasino or Ayuso Parsonen or guys like that are you got to make a decision on now are close to being guys that come in and contribute heavily for your team? And maybe you would have. Like, look, when Steven Stamkos is available, you'd be crazy if you have cap space to not be interested in that. So I get that. But I do it like, you know, Matthew Wood, Tanner Molendijk, Andrew Gibson, who they just traded for, who I watched very closely last week at development camp. Kid's going to be good. Like there is, I think, a timeline here where you can be competitive right now and you can still have enough prospects in your pipeline where you can fill in the holes as they appear afterward and hope that you can be competitive for a longer stretch. Now, make no mistake about it, they're all in to win a championship right now. And there is going to be, regardless of the prospects that they have, when this is all said and done 3 or 4 years from now, there's probably going to be some pain attached to it.
Sure.
Just because of the money that they've invested in this. But I think that he has done a very good job of kind of reasonably lining up those two things with going forward in the now and still not totally abandoning your future with the draft capital and the prospects that they still have in the pipeline.
I mean, you think about just, again, Yossi and Forsberg. I know we got to go, but you think about those guys, the difference in outlook. They're pros. They're great players. If they'd moved Saros and it was clearly it's going to be hard to maintain what they did last year, they'd come in, they'd work out all offseason, all that stuff. They'd come in and they'd produce. But think about now what they are looking at. And the possibility. You tell me there's not a little extra oomph in everything they do because of this? There has to be.
You have to view it as an incredible opportunity. And I told you yesterday, I talked to Yossi a little bit last week, and that's basically the vibe I got is what an opportunity that's right in front of us now. And we'll see what they're able to do with it. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, our YouTube chat, up and operational as well. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kennington Smith from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on all things SEC football. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 106.3, The Game.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.